past 1:30 in the afternoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the director of the Sports Law Institute at Vermont Law School. He's also a legal analyst and writer for Sports Illustrated. Michael McCann, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me on.
Michael, obviously the new buzzword for anybody focused on the NHLPA lockout is decertification. It was also very active, sort of something on the fringe and involved in the NBA labor dispute and the NFL labor dispute before that. For our audience, who you know may not be lawyers, what does decertification mean?
Well, it means that the NHL Players Association would no longer represent individual NHL players in collective bargaining with the league for terms of employment. The NHLPA would continue to exist as a trade association, so it could still represent players for certain things, like negotiating a contract for a new video game and things along those lines. But in terms of employment, the union would essentially give up its legal capacity to represent players. And the importance of this is that under U.S. federal antitrust law, because NHL teams and teams in other leagues are competitors, they are supposed to behave as competitors. And when competitors join hands to restrain certain conditions, like, for instance, free agency rules, rules about the NHL draft, where teams essentially say, you know, you get first dibs with this player and he can only sign with you, these are all very, on the surface, anti-competitive, that they're competitors joining hands to restrain competition. They would be, in all likelihood, unlawful under federal law, but because they've been collectively bargained with the union, they're not. There's a labor exemption. What decertification does is an attempt to say that exemption is gone, and all of these rules and the lockout itself are subject to antitrust law.
Why did the NHLPA wait so long to threaten decertification, Michael?
It's a good question, and I think in hindsight we'll be asking that more and more. One reason is because in good faith they wanted to try to work out a deal with the league that once they went the path of decertification, it would likely be followed by antitrust litigation, and that would complicate things and maybe delay things, and I think the players thought they could avoid that. The other reason is more tactical, and it's that by waiting to decertify, the players can more credibly say that they bargained in good faith, that they didn't immediately decertify, as has been done with other players' associations, that they really wanted to strike a deal with the league, and they waited to do this until it was absolutely necessary.
Michael, this question could be for the NHL or any other professional sports league, but when you talk about decertification, would you say that that's synonymous with uncertainty?
Yeah, I mean, it lends uncertainty because it says, in essence, there's no one calling the shots. At least, in theory, there's no one calling shots. That Donald Fair is no longer in charge of players in terms of their employment and negotiating their employment. That individual players can, in theory, strike their own deal. The uncertainty that it lends is that, A, it makes it extremely likely that different players will file antitrust lawsuits in different jurisdictions, potentially not only in different jurisdictions in the United States, but also in Canada, making it even more complex. And there's always the risk that the union won't be there when the players want to recertify, that they may want different leadership if they want to bring the union back. It's unlikely to be the case. We saw in the NBA and NFL where the players recertified. In those situations, the players filed lawsuits, and then the lawyers essentially acted as negotiators because they were negotiating a settlement of litigation. But by doing so, they were able to work out terms of a new CBA, in essence. So it does lend uncertainty, although I don't think it's going to lend so much uncertainty that it would destroy the league or the Players Association altogether.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Michael McCann. He's the director of the Sports Law Institute at Vermont Law School. He's also a legal analyst and writer for Sports Illustrated. Michael, you know, decertification is sort of talked about as being a positive for the Players Association. Are there any potential drawbacks for the for a Players Association, for the union to decertify?
I think a big drawback is that it makes the probability of the season being canceled extremely likely. And I say that because once they decertify, there will be, in all likelihood, different lawsuits filed, And, you know, courts don't move at the pace of leagues and players. They move at their own pace. There's a scheduling where other cases have to be heard before, you know, sports crises. And that's important because the players will likely ask for an injunction to have a court say that the lockout is illegal under antitrust law. But that's not going to be immediate. That's going to take weeks. And we're already almost in December, weeks. Even if the players win, let's just, you know, say a best-case scenario is the players win in the district court level, and then they win in an appeal because there's no question that the league would appeal. You know, this is weeks, if not months, and the season's going to be canceled by then. So they could win the battle, but in essence lose the season, and I don't know if that necessarily is going to be in their best interest.
You mentioned this would obviously play out in the court system. Can you explain why jurisdiction and which courts would have jurisdiction over a decertification process has such an impact?
Yeah, it's a really an issue that doesn't seem like it would be huge, you know, because we think of U.S. courts and Canadian courts, but really within these two countries, courts are very different, and jurisdictions vary a great deal in their judicial philosophy. And I say that because in the United States, there's positive case law for leagues, including the NHL, in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit, which is in New York. In addition, there's a positive decision for leagues from the Tom Brady lawsuit against the NFL. That's in the Eighth Circuit in the Midwest, in St. Louis. However, if players file a lawsuit in California, where it's a more progressive court system in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, they may have a better chance of succeeding. But there's no U.S. Supreme Court decision that clearly answers this question, so whether or not a lockout is legal or unlawful in the situation. So it really it depends on which federal jurisdiction you're in, and that doesn't even get to the fact that Canadian provinces have different laws on these things. And so where lawsuits are filed, whether those lawsuits are consolidated, I'm actually surprised, I've said this before, I'm surprised the NHL hasn't yet sued the players, trying to file first in the jurisdiction that would benefit them. This is something the NBA did in August of 2011. They filed a lawsuit in New York way before decertification by the players as an attempt to say that decertification would be illegal. But the real purpose of that was to say, let's try this in New York where case law is good for us. I'm kind of surprised the NHL hasn't done that yet.
What grounds would the NHL be able to sue the NHLPA under?
They would seek a declaratory action arguing that under U.S. antitrust law, decertification would be unlawful, even though it hasn't happened yet. Now, of course, the players would say, it hasn't happened yet. This is a ripe question. We can't yet address it. And this is something that the NBA players argued. And we really don't know what would have happened because they reached a settlement before any of this played out. But had it played out, it would have given the NBA potentially a pretty big tactical advantage in litigation.
You mentioned, Michael, you know, the NBA was eager to file that claim. Even though the NHL has yet to do that, would it not be in their best interest to file when, you know, early next week, if not Monday morning?
I would predict Monday. I wouldn't surprise. Now, who knows? Maybe they're talking this weekend, and maybe they're making progress, and they don't want to do this. Because once that move is made, the tone changes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's already bad, right? It's clearly getting acrimonious if it isn't already there. But once a lawsuit is filed, I think the discussion changes, and I think both the league and players, whoever strikes first, whether it be the league seeking a declaratory action or the players decertifying, would largely be saying, we're prepared to lose the season. And maybe they want to avoid that, but if it appears that they're nowhere near a deal, and it seems from what I can tell they're still a far ways off on a number of key issues, it wouldn't surprise me if Monday morning we see a lawsuit filed. It wouldn't surprise me if it's in New York.
Michael, is there any possible situation where this case could go before the Supreme Court?
It is possible. It's unlikely, but possible. You know, only about 1% of cases ever get to the U.S. Supreme Court. But the twist here is that, let's just play it out. Let's say the players file a lawsuit and get an injunction blocking the NHL from having a lockout, and then a U.S. Court of Appeals affirms the decision of the district court. This didn't happen in the NFL. Players won the first round, and then they lost on appeal. But let's say the NHL players win on appeal. Then we're going to have a split in circuits. We're going to say one federal appellate-level court says lockouts are illegal. The other, from the Tom Brady decision, says they're legal. The U.S. Supreme Court may intervene and issue an opinion saying one way or the other. So, you know, it isn't inconceivable. It's again, very unlikely, and we're far away from that point, but this is a matter that hasn't yet been resolved by the Supreme Court.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Michael McCann. He's the director of the Sports Law Institute at the Vermont Law School. He's also a legal analyst and writer for Sports Illustrated. Michael, in terms of jurisdiction, this is sort of, I mean, the NHL is unique as compared to the NBA. Well, I guess not less so the NBA, but more the NFL, in that it's both in Canada and in the United States. How would that sort of cross-jurisdictional, cross-border boundaries play into effect?
Well, from the league standpoint, the league is going to argue that it shouldn't matter. The league is going to say that, look, the league itself is headquartered in New York City. Most of the franchises are in the United States. I don't know the exact percent, but it's clearly a decisive majority of NHL franchises are in the United States. And also much of the bargaining has taken place in New York. But the players are going to say, wait a second, this is fundamentally a Canadian sport. Players Association is based in Canada. A number of NHL franchises are in Canada, and I think we could say maybe more should be in Canada than are currently there, if we look at the lack of success of teams in Phoenix and some other places in the U.S. So the reason why this is so important is that I would imagine the players want Canadian courts' involvement, because Canadian courts are likely to be much more favorable for labor than in the United States. And we've already seen some lawsuits filed where Canadian courts have been asked to hear claims related to the lockout. It's in the players' tactical advantage to try to get this in Canada, whereas the league is going to really want this to be in the U.S. and specifically in the Second Circuit or the Eighth Circuit.
Michael, can you explain the significance of the case Brown v. Pro Football and with respect to antitrust law?
Yeah, so the Brown v. Pro Football was a 1995 decision before the U.S. Supreme Court. And in that case, the key question is whether or not the terms of a collective bargaining agreement that has expired still call the shots for the league. In other words, is the league still able to have free agency rules even though there isn't a CBA in place? Because without a CBA, those rules are going to be subject to antitrust law and in all likelihood be found unlawful. In that case, the court essentially said that as long as the parties are still negotiating, even if the CBA has expired, the terms of the CBA continue. Here, though, it's not clear if that's necessarily as applicable, because the players, in all likelihood, would shut off discussions with the league, aware of the Brown decision, and try to argue that there are no good faith negotiations. On the other hand, the league is going to say, well, through the litigation process, there are still discussions. It's going to get complicated. But that decision really gets at how long CBAs last in terms of power, even if it's no longer technically in place.
Michael, this is the $64,000 question here. How do you see this current NHL lockout resolving itself?
Well, I hope it's resolved by an agreement. I think it would be a mistake for the league and the players to lose another season. I think it would damage the image. I think they would lose many fans who wouldn't come back. And I can't imagine that they really do that, right? Because it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to lose another season. And because it doesn't make sense, I think they will eventually reach a deal that to save the season. Even if the certification occurs, they could still talk through their lawyers and reach some type of deal. I just can't imagine that the league and the players would be so foolhardy to lose another season. I mean, look, for the players, they're never getting that money back. Mm-hmm. It's gone. And for the owners, do they really want to own franchises where, what, two out of every 10 years there are no seasons? I mean, what's the value of a franchise in that kind of league? It's unbelievable that this is occurring, that it's still going on. And I have to think cooler heads prevail and that Gary Bettman and Donald Fair don't want to have their legacies tarnished by this.
Michael McCann is the director of the Sports Law Institute at Vermont Law School. He's also a legal analyst and writer for Sports Illustrated. And you can see more of his work on Twitter, at McCann Sports Law. Michael, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Some great insight.
Okay, thanks for having me on.
Take care, Michael.
Thanks a lot, Michael.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290 and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 10 minutes to the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Michael McCann for some great insight into the concept of decertification. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Earlier today, we were joined by Paul Kelly, the former executive director of the NHLPA. That interview is now available in its entirety on the TSN.ca website. You can just scroll down to the bottom of the page and you'll see it right there. That was some terrific insight from Paul Kelly. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. If you happen to not yet have your Christmas party for your office, maybe you're involved in that, you're on the social committee, contact Rumors. That's the place to have your Christmas party. 488-4520, area code 204-488-4520. Keith Alberstadt is in this week. Daryl Lennox is in for 2 weeks starting next week. And then coming up in the new year, the Incredible Boris is going to be back, yes. Comedy hypnotist.
I've seen the Incredible Boris.
He's
very
fantastic.
Good. Very good.
And Rob Schneider, of course.
Rob Schneider, I just saw him. I was watching Home Alone 2 before I came to the show.
Yes. Is he in that?
Oh, yeah. I was told to keep an eye on Macaulay Culkin.
I don't remember that.
After he checks in as his dad, yeah.
That movie was, what, 96, 97?
Earlier than
it's
that.
A long time ago. Drew was only like 25 back then.
That's very clever. Anyways, the Rumors Restaurant Comedy Club is your one-stop destination for Christmas parties, for New Year's, just a great night out.
You know, Drew, I heard that Michael Remus was on the Antisocial Committee for 1290.
Ah, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's a clever one. He's upset on the other side of the glass. He's got his arms. He's flailing his arms.
You've upset Michael. Now Michael's upset.
Yeah.
Drew, you better go in there and apologize.
I didn't say anything. Richard said it. I'll calm him down afterwards. Let's talk about decertification as a tactic to be used by the NHLPA. You know, if they go this road, and they go this road, and you know, when the NFL went that way and the NBA went that way, they still got a deal done pretty quickly. For some reason, and I don't know if it's because both sides are dug in or, you know, there's just too much ego involved or whatever it may be. If the NHLPA chooses to decertify, I think we're here for longer than just this year. I think we're here next year as well, potentially.
There's too much uncertainty, Drew, I think, for the certification to actually happen. And I feel like there'd be a leadership change before it actually went to fruition in terms of actually going forward with these lawsuits and giving up the season. I mean, that's just it. The ramifications, first of all, we talk about uncertainty with Michael, but the uncertainty is who knows what the results are going to be. And we spoke about that earlier in the show.
Right. We talked about the USFL.
Who knows? Who knows if you're going to win or not? And it's a complete and total last resort. I don't think it's going to come to that. I think the sides are far too close to incur all the legal bills to go into an antitrust litigation battle in multiple jurisdictions, probably joining it up eventually. And it's the cash word, and we need to learn about it because it is a possibility.
Yep.
But as Michael said at the end of the interview, I just can't see at the end of the day how it comes to that.
I agree with you, Richie. And, you know, we know that decertification would take so long. And like Michael McCann just said, they'd have to decide on the court, and it would take a long time and to decide, you know, which jurisdiction would handle the case. But, you know, if the NHLPA and the NHL really do want a deal, and they both claim that they do.
Talk is cheap, though.
It's talk is cheap.
I mean, neither side's going to come out and say, well, we don't really want a deal.
Exactly.
But, right. You know, their actions so far have not really demonstrated that they truly do want that deal.
And from a strategic point of view and a bargaining point of view, get in that room, find the $182 million difference, figure out what you need to figure out, and really get the deal done now. Because, like Michael McCann said, like so many people have said on the show, and we've said ourselves, they've already lost this much of the season. They've already lost the Winter Classic. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, they announced that they've already lost the All-Star Game. It's just bad news and bad news and bad news. You know, why not? You know, at least salvage a 40-60 game season at this point. Let's really figure out what needs to be done and what money is fair for both sides. It's about the money over the course of the CBA, and let's get it done. I mean, decertification. You know, I haven't really heard one person say that decertification won't end the season now. And like Drew said, it could mean there's no season next year, which to me is absurd. You know, to use your favorite word, Richie, to think that we could lose another possible season, I think you're going to lose. I think you're doing permanent damage at that point. If there's no NHL for 2 years, you're doing permanent damage. That's going to affect the NHL way worse than this lockout already has.
if they decertify, and I mean, there's, you know, Elliot Friedman has a good article sort of answering some of those questions as to what it actually means in addition to all the legalities and everything. I mean, there's no guaranteed contracts anymore. There's nothing. It's the Wild West in terms That's of right. everything out there. There's no, you know, contracting rules. There's no salary caps. There's
no pension, no insurance.
No insurance, right, exactly.
No health benefits.
No health benefits. It would just be absolute chaos out there.
Yep.
I mean, part of me wants to see what it would actually turn into.
Too much to lose. Way too much to lose.
Yeah. I mean, of course. It's
for both sides.
I agree. I mean, yeah. It's unlikely. It's such an, you know, to me, it's a bit of an idle threat. You know,
yeah,
for sure. It's the ace in the hole that you never really expect to use. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. But, you know, you have it there, and when you start waving it around, you pretend you're going to use it.
I don't think Bettman, frankly, I don't think Bettman and Daly are buying the idle threat, right. as you term it.
And, Richie, I think that it's time for, you know, especially the media. I mean, we're part of this, but it's time for the NHL-NBA comparisons to stop. It's enough. Yes, mm-hmm. Gary Bettman used to be an executive in the NBA, and he's good friends with David Stern. And, yes, the NBA had a 66-game season, and after, you know, they said that there was a potential for the season to be missed, they made a deal, and then after they, you know, threatened to decertify, yeah, but this is completely different. Let's stop saying that, you know, because of the history and, you know, the NHL and the NBA, that, you know, if the NHL does this, then it'll be like the NBA and we'll get a 66-game
season.
The
NBA had their Schmocko shortened season, I think it was 1999.
And last year.
Right, but before last year.
99. The Spurs won the title. Did they beat the Knicks that year?
Yeah, I think they did. Yeah, that's right.
Get Remus to look it up.
That was Knicks with the 8th seed, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Remus, please look it up.
No,
it
was. We're telling you. Exactly. Right. Oh, I know it.
Well, okay, right. It's gospel? Okay.
Yeah.
Latrell Sprewell and crew.
That's right.
But the point is that NBA, and as to your point, you know, the contrast between the two is NBA hadn't lost a season ever.
Right.
Never mind, you know, so.
And the fact that the NHL, you know.
There's more at stake here.
Should the NHL feel insulted at all that the NHLPA's offer was only for 5 years?
Again, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. You need to make it at least 7. When was the last deal? 7.
Yep. 7 with, yeah.
I think how quickly that went by.
In a blink of an eye. We were talking about, you know.
Can't have it. 7's like the minimum.
I think it should be a minimum 10 years.
You could argue that.
Well, the other ones NFL went 10, and the NBA went 10
so
as well.
So if the NHL is taking their lead from the NFL and the NBA, Drew, why not take the lead on 10 years?
The NHL, I mean, the NHL offered what, 7?
And the PA always wanted to be a longer deal, and that's why it's weird. The NHL offered 7. I think they talked about 6, and the NHLPA offered 5. But in my opinion, unions or players' associations should always want it to be longer because the next negotiation, they're going to get killed again.
Right.
So why would they not want it to be longer? It's odd.
That's a good point because, you know, every negotiation, I mean, and, you know, this might go to proving how fair or unfair negotiations are. Yep. The players always tend to lose each and every negotiation.
From what they had before, but overall money they're making more, but so are the owners. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, they lose from the previous, but the money has gone up usually exponentially in the 7 years of the current CBA or whatever.
Right.
So, I mean.
Costs go up too.
Yeah, costs go up too, of course. Right. I mean, admittedly, but, I mean, those costs generally aren't borne by the players.
Well, it's part of the argument, right?
Right. Anyways, leave it there. When we come back, what do we have coming up? Hang on. Let me check this.
Do we have Don Cherry?
Yes, Don Cherry. Don Cherry goes off in an article in the Toronto Star. Sometimes he just can get to the nuts and bolts of the issue. And Don
Sometimes.
Cherry, well, usually he can.
Don Cherry, we've said this before, he says what everybody's thinking.
Well, and it's true. And we'll talk about what Don Cherry said after these commercial messages. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go on TSN 1290. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by the sick one and the injured one. The sick one being Richard Pollock, the injured one being Ezra Ginsberg, who it's a little awkward, as you. I mean, I appreciate you got the back pain and the herniated disc and everything, but we'll be, you know, talking, we'll be in the middle of a segment, and then all of a sudden you'll stand straight up in your chair, you know, after sitting down because your back is...
Yeah, I'm not supposed to sit for longer than, like, you know, 10 or 15 minutes at a time, so that's...
Which is really unfortunate because you're a guy who really enjoys his sitting and his lying.
Sometimes it's a, you know, Friday night, Saturday night, and someone's asking me what I'm doing, and I just say sitting. I just sit. Mm-hmm. Like 3 or 4 hours straight of just sitting.
Sitting, lying, lounging.
Yep. Laughing and lying.
Yeah. Yep.
Laughing and sitting and watching TV.
Yeah. Well, anyways, hopefully you're on the road to recovery sooner rather than later.
Hopefully. I mean, it's going to take a while, but if you've ever had a herniated disc, it's not fun. That's for sure. I hope it goes away, but you know, I'm getting some physio.
That's the kind of analysis you've come to expect here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Herniated disc equals not fun. So, you know, take that one to the bank there, kids.
Yeah.
Don Cherry, bless his heart, sometimes is a little bit controversial with his comments. Sometimes he's a little jingoistic for my taste. And sometimes he's bang on. This would be an instance when he was bang on. He wrote a special column in only in the way that Don Cherry can write.
That's the best.
Yeah, it's, you know, sentence structure doesn't really, you know, count for anything. But anyways, Don Cherry, it's in the Toronto Star. We'll link it on our Twitter page right now at Illegal Curve. Pretty much just going out and blasting the players. Are you surprised? And we'll read some of the quotes throughout this conversation.
Yeah.
Are you surprised at how aggressive he was towards the players?
Cherry?
Yeah.
No. I mean, he's the thing about Don Cherry that allows him to kind of say what he wants, and he would anyways, but he's been a coach. He's been a player. He's been in the game. He's seen both sides. He's worked with Harry Sinden, yeah. Revere general manager and coach in his time. He's played in a cup of coffee in the NHL, and he played many years in the AHL. So, and he can not only that, but he can relate to being kind of a big name as a coach and basically a nobody, a no name as a player. And I think that allows him. Anybody can say what they want, anyhow, but it does allow him a little bit more latitude in terms of what he does say. And to be honest, you know, the thing about Don Cherry is that he doesn't say what everybody wants to hear. I mean, what you have in the media a lot of times now is people say what they want to hear. They're not necessarily saying their opinion because they're worried about the backlash. They're worried about the fallout. And they don't really editorialize anything. And it's hard to even get to know the personalities. And with Don Cherry, you know where you stand here. And that's what you got to appreciate about him.
And Don Cherry right now doesn't have his soapbox.
That's right.
There's no coach's corner right now. So he's, to be honest with you, he's been pretty quiet lately, but... You know, Don Cherry, you look back with what happened with Dallas Eakins and, you know, the Toronto Marlies and how they were handling the Nazem Kadri. I think at the end of the article, he actually mentions that Nazem Kadri's been playing well in the AHL just as kind of a joke.
Yeah.
But, you know, Dallas Eakins even said himself, he goes, you know, even though Grape said this, I'm a huge fan of Cherry and I love just like everybody else. So, I mean, some people over the last few years... have said that, you know, they think Don Cherry has lost his pulse on the game. I completely disagree. I think, you know, if you talk about what he's been talking about with the equipment and the changes that need to be made, it's still relevant. He was one of the first guys in the media to bring that up. And like Richie said, you know, the guy has been through it all, you know, struggling as a grinder in the, you know, the minors and as a coach and all that. But, you know, what Don Cherry is saying, someone kind of has to say it to these players. I mean, you know, we're ourselves, Illegal Curve is down at the Iceplex interviewing some of these guys. You know, Dave Minuk talked to Andrew Ladd yesterday and Ryan Reeves. And, you know, these guys have to answer the questions, and some of them say things that, you know, they regret. And then there's guys like Roman Hamrlik who say things. But, again, these players at the end of this lockout are going to have to go back to the... back to these teams and play for these owners. And, you know, to be honest with you, a lot of it is whining that's going on deaf ears. A lot of people just, they can't sympathize and relate to these players who are saying, you know, we just can't, we think that we deserve this and blah, 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 blah. It's a lot of, you know, empty whining, to be honest with you.
The best line he had was, why don't these players with their big mouths call their owners, call them idiots and cancers? No, they won't, because they don't have the guts. And it's true.
Let me read that one more time, because I think that's, it's an important point you just made, an important quote you read.
Drew's actually going to read it in a different language. He's going to read it in French and Spanish.
Don Cherry from his article. Why don't these players, with their big mouths, call out their owners? Call them idiots and cancers. No, they won't, because they don't have the guts.
Using the word cancer is stupid anyways, by the way.
And he rips them at the start of the article. Yeah. I mean,
I agree 100%. It's ridiculous.
You shouldn't be using that term. The language that people are using is a little bit...
It's well beyond board. If the players think they're helping themselves by calling Bettman an idiot and saying Bettman is a cancer, ... first, you unfeeling jerks, talking to players, how do you think the people with cancer feel? What is the point of sticking Bettman and the NHL? All you do is make them more determined. Because now, and I agree with Corey Schneider, it's almost getting personal because I don't care who you are. Nobody likes to be called a cancer or an idiot.
And he's right. I mean, Gary Bettman did not decide, or to be honest with you, Bill Daly as well. They didn't just them decide, you know, let's have a lockout. I mean, they work for the owners. The owners decided they wanted a lockout.
Do the players think that, you know, by ripping Gary Bettman, it makes it like there won't be any hard feelings between the players and the owners?
Yeah, that's all. Exactly. I mean, it's easy. You know, if they're going to rip if a Jet player is going to rip, put it to you this way. If Ron Haynes is going to start yelling at Gary Bettman, as was reported, why doesn't he start yelling at Mark Chipman?
Right. Well, because
he's signing his checks. Or why doesn't another player?
And you don't think that, you know, Mark Chipman, when he hears about, you know, Gary Bettman getting yelled at by Ron Haynes, also doesn't have some sort of, you know, reaction to that? Well, it's okay because he didn't yell at me. He yelled at my boss.
I would bet he has a pretty strong reaction to that.
I would think anybody that gets yelled at, first of all, in a negotiation, I know things get heated and everything, but what is the benefit?
And I think that goes back to the root of the issue.
To a player being involved in that.
Why are these guys in there? Why are there that many players in there?
Why would
I think that's
player,
Donald Fear's way to do it, though, right?
But why would any player? What is the fringe? What is the net benefit to a player, be it a journeyman player or a superstar player, being particularly active in the Players Association?
What do you mean?
What is the benefit to them?
Well, I mean, they get to know the process. They know exactly what's going on.
Okay, so
I don't mind
what's the
that.
Benefit financially in terms of the rest of their career? Maybe Ron Haynes, he gets a job with the NHLPA after he retires?
I mean, he gets a better feel and he can communicate the message to other people and they can control it a little more.
Well, I'm talking about 2 years down the road, 3 years down the road, if his career is over. And it's over not necessarily because he can't play anymore, but it's over because there's hard feelings in regards to the lockout.
I think that might be the case for one or two teams or one or two owners or whatever it may be. But at the end of the day, that's the problem with the owners all along.
Kevin Mawai of the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, formerly the Jets, right?
Formerly the Jets. Yeah. Was a tremendous offensive lineman.
Yeah.
Never got another job after the lockout. He was the head of the NFL Players Association. Well. And people said he could still play in this league, but nobody hired him.
You're saying he blacklisted himself?
I'm saying that,
what he did in the union affected his ability to get a job?
I'm saying it. I don't know that for sure, but I'm saying you can make a reasonable correlation between the two.
Well, David Boland, that came out earlier today about the retweet. He's an idiot too. I mean, this was again the problem with, I think, Donald Fear. We said it was going to be a problem.
We said when he gave the players free rein to speak.
I mean, just...
See, the problem is,
some of them are taking good points together. Other guys just don't, and that's the problem. And they make stupid decisions. Like Dave Boland, was the story exactly, Drew? He retweeted somebody.
Somebody asked David Boland for a retweet if you think Gary Bettman should be murdered.
Yeah, you want him dead or something.
Right,
And then Gary, what is David? I have that story right here. David Boland says, it was a mistake. I never meant to retweet that out. First of all, stop with the, and I have a sore throat here, but stop with the I never meant to retweet it out. You pressed retweet. Like, what does that mean? You didn't mean to press, like, Jeff O'Neill. My thing was, it's like, you know what? Have a spy. You retweeted it? Apologize. I made a mistake. I retweeted it. Don't say,
exactly.
I never meant to retweet it out. Who? Did your dog come and press the mouse?
Of course not.
Idiot.
We want to hear, this is the thing, we want to hear what these guys have to say. Well, some people do. I mean, some people don't.
At this point, I don't have any interest in hearing anybody say anything.
Okay, so you want to hear, you basically want a gag order. But the problem is, they've gone too far.
I want them to not go on the radio. I don't want to hear Bill Daly, and then I don't want to hear
Steve Fear on the
radio.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't spend your Fridays doing that. Spend your Fridays negotiating. That's not too much to ask. I understand that we're on the radio, and it's great for the radio stations to get these interviews. What's even better for radio stations?
And games.
Have games to play and talk about. Not Donald Fear and not Bill Daly and not Gary Bettman and not Steve Fear.
No,
that's better.
No offense to any of the interviewers or the interviews that, you know, were done over the last couple days, but they didn't say anything.
Paul Kelly was a terrific guest. He was on this program 2 hours ago. With all due respect to Paul Kelly and the insights that he brings, I don't want to talk to Paul Kelly very much. I want to talk to the guys who are covering the teams the Jets are supposed to be playing. The Jets were supposed to be in Philly yesterday, an afternoon game, Black Friday in the U.S. I want to talk to Anthony Sanfilippo. I want to talk to Sam Carcitti. I want to talk to the Philadelphia guys who cover that team on a daily basis. I don't want to have to talk about this anymore, and it's insulting to fans to have to listen to these guys on the radio having dueling interviews rather than sitting in a room and negotiating.
And there's no excuse for that. Obviously, you know, it was American Thanksgiving on Thursday, but, you know, this is, I mean, you're right, Drew. I agree with you 100%. We need to have a deal done here.
Drew's on fire right now.
There's way too much. And you can't even say rhetoric anymore because we've heard the rhetoric too much. It's just, it's reached a breaking point.
I like it, Drew.
Where it's almost like we know, it's just like, oh, okay, they're going to talk again. And then they're just going to disappoint us again. And they're going to tell us that each side isn't really doing enough. Yeah, it's the same old, and it's enough.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, Richard Pollock. Michael Remus is now producing the program for the last 40 minutes or so. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. We always like to hear from our fans. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And, of course, our website with the latest NHL, CBA, Winnipeg Jets, St. John's Ice Caps. What are they, the Colorado Eagles? Is that the ECHL team?
Yeah, that's right, Drew.
Yeah, Colorado Eagles news, whatever it might be, is www.IllegalCurve.com. Gentlemen, where do they go from here? Where does this next week take us in these negotiations?
Well, I've said November 30th, I think, is that deadline date where the players realize that very possibly the money they've lost is not something they can recoup even if they had accepted a prior offer. I mean, you know, I think there's three deadline dates now before the season's over, maybe four. No, three, really. December 15th, January 1st, January 15th, and then the season's probably done. The idea that they could play in February is the biggest joke ever.
Well, why could they do it in 94 but they can't do it now?
What?
Sort of start the year, you know, at the end of January.
Well, I'm saying, you know, December 15th, January 1st, and then January 15th, because they started January 20th that last time. That's as far as you can go, because you ended, I think, June 30th that year. But, you know, remember last time there was that last ditch effort by Gretzky and Lemieux to get in February? You can't start a season in February. So, to me, there's three more deadlines. And you look at it now, you're November 24th today. Is that what it is, November 24th?
It is, all day long.
Yeah, all day long, that's right. It's like my mom. So 6 days. So six.
Usually my sense of humor level.
Yeah, so 6 days. So you're looking at basically, you know, 51 days to get a deal, to start the season.
Right.
The deal basically has to be done by January 7th or 8th to get the season started by January 15th because they want like a one-week training camp. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at...
It's going to be some lousy hockey for that first...
Yeah, you're looking at less than, you know, looking at 5 weeks or so to get something done here.
The season at this point is in danger and, you know, some people have written that some of the moderate owners have to get involved. We talked about, you know, Jeff Molson of Montreal and, you know, Bell and Rogers with Toronto. I mean, because right now we know that the guys that are the hardliners are Jeremy Jacobs and Craig Leopold and, you know, maybe
Murray Edwards.
Maybe not so much Ed Snyder because he's apparently not as hardline as he once was. But, you know, there's, let's say, four, five, six, really probably more like eight. But there's other teams that, you know, hopefully will put some more pressure on. But, I mean, it's we're at a point where they just have to get a deal done. Now, if there's this whole decertification process, you have to think, Richie, that, you know, now the NHLPA is going to put a lot of time and effort into figuring out what that's going to involve. And that, you know, they have to look at all of these different, you know, contingency plans and, you know, what court are they going to use. And
it's worth noting that if they start down the decertification path, mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that I mean, the NFL did, and you got further along than the NBA did.
You have to petition for it, and there's like a 30-day, they just need 33%, whatever it may be. Then there's a 45-day wait, I think, and then they have to get a vote of over majority. So you're talking about that process, really, when they get it done, is the season's over.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, just because they start down that road doesn't preclude them
I don't think that is a determining factor, meaning if they do attempt to decertify, I don't think that's the reason the deal will get done. I think it'll get done for many other reasons.
So, I mean, do you think they sit down and you know, negotiate this week? Do you think they get together in a room?
Yeah, I do. I think they do get together in a room this week. They almost have to, really.
Do you think they're as close together or as far apart as people are speculating?
No, I don't. I mean, think about it. You know, you hear it, see the $182 million, and the owners will tell you it's not that close. But, you know, $182 million sounds like a lot of money.
$182 million.
Yeah. And then you talk about 5 years, 6 years, and how much you're talking about here. You know, say it's a 7-year CBA and you're paying $182 million over 7 years, for example. Or that's the difference, you know. How many millions is that to these millionaire and billionaire owners? And if you get a little bit of give on the other contracting issues, and then you end up making that deal. I mean, I actually don't think they're that far apart, aside from all the posturing and media comments on both sides. I think that, and this is, I think, where it leads to the nobody really knowing what's going on. Nobody's telegraphing it. There's no insiders. Insiders don't know anything. So I don't even know if owners necessarily know what's going on with Fear. You know, there's been word that they're frustrated by the fact that he shows up late to meetings, takes long breaks.
Let me just interrupt for a second on being late to meeting. That's just rude. And I would say that from either side.
I agree.
I don't quite understand when being rude became a negotiation tactic.
I agree.
You know, I don't care anybody in life. If you tell somebody you're going to be there at 2 o'clock, you're going to be there at 1 o'clock, you're going to be there at 9 a.m., or in these guys' case, when they, for whatever reason, decide to start negotiations at 6 at night, generally you got about a 5-minute window where I'm going to say that if you're not there by then, you're being rude.
I think they should bring Tom Coughlin in the meetings and allow...
Tom Coughlin, the head coach of the New York Giants, who tells his players, if you're 5 minutes early to your meeting, you're late.
Yeah, but when you talk about, you know, Gary Bettman and Bill Daly and their familiarity with the Fear Brothers, they don't know them that well.
Problem.
And you talk about the lack of trust, or more so maybe that full trust isn't there. And then, you know, Donald Fear's coming into meetings late, not negotiating on the same structure as the NHL. It's not good. And you know, getting back to your question earlier, Drew, I don't think that they're really close, and I don't think they're really far apart. I would say that they're getting closer, and they've gotten closer over the last 4 weeks. But again, I don't have a good read on, again, I said it about an hour ago, I still think that this is a coin flip for a season. I don't think anybody knows for sure if there's a season. I think right now, Gary Bettman and Bill Daly and the Fear Brothers, they can make a deal if they want to. But, you know, it's being presented, you know, the pro NHLPA guys are saying, well, we've already lost all this money. They're trying to break the union. They're trying to, it's not about money because they're losing money. They're willing to lose more money. That's what they're saying. And then the NHL is saying that, you know, the NHLPA is just not willing to, they don't really want to get a season because all of their proposals are not really what we're asking for. They're not willing to accept this. They're not willing to accept that. So each side is spinning it like the other side really isn't looking to get a deal done. So at this point, I mean, it seems like everybody that we've talked to wants a deal done and thinks it's in the best interest of both sides to have hockey this year. But again, if there isn't a season this year, I think the damage is going to be, I don't want to say, you know,
it's catastrophic, Izzy.
It's going to be bad.
Let me ask you this question, and I don't for sure know the answer, but let's say the NHLPA successfully decertifies, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe that that could be an opportunity for the NHL to remove franchises without a lot less of a problem and remove jobs from the NHL. If they so choose to, if they decide to go that way, buy out the owners of certain struggling franchises, if they want to do that, and the NHLPA wouldn't be able to do anything about it. You know, there's no union, there's no collective bargaining agreement to prevent them from doing so. There's nothing in place. There's nobody to negotiate with that would prevent that from happening. You know, not saying it's going to happen, but that is certainly something that I think you could have.
You become completely irrelevant in the American market. You hurt your brand all over. The Canadian market hurts you for sure. May not hurt you here because you're hot and you're back and all that stuff, and I understand that. But it's going to hurt you in other places. I know the obsession with hockey, but it's going to hurt you. You may never come back from it.
Are you surprised at how well the NHL has come back from the last lockout?
I am, but it hadn't happened before.
Right.
Well, I think they're pushing their luck if they think it's going to happen again.
And it was the Canadian teams that were largely responsible for it. And I mean, what do they say too? That the six, now there's seven with Winnipeg, but the six Canadian teams are responsible for what, 30% or 40% of the revenue, something like that.
And you look at the TV, and like now everything's in live television, right? So it's all the television stuff. So the war over, you know, from TSN bidding on it to the Mortal Enemy bidding on it to CBC bidding on it, right? That trifecta going after the rights, that's going to be a bidding war regardless of how many. You could sit out 3 years and or 2 years, and when that contract's up, the bidding war will be on for that. So that those things not necessarily will change, but sponsors may change, fans and purchasing tickets will change, and, you know, the Canadian dollar may change, although that seems somewhat unlikely based on what we've read, but, you know, who knows? You can't really predict that. But you become irrelevant in the States, and, you know, your NBC Sports Network's fine, and you're on TV on there basically every night, but nobody cares. I mean, come on, you don't miss two of your last 9 years. Is it two of your last nine?
Yeah.
Or is it eight? Two of your last eight.
Yeah, 04, 05.
And that's a joke. That's a joke. 25% of the seasons in the past 8 years you've missed. It's incomprehensible to me. And there's no real benefit. I mean, what's the benefit? The benefit is so you can save, you know, so it's $182 million difference. If you accept that number and you meet him at 90, you're going to lose more than 90.
Sure. You're going to lose a lot more than 90.
Right. And the players are never going to make that money back. Now, the owners obviously own these businesses and they can give it to their family and they can have it forever and ever and ever. And it'll increase their franchise value if it's 50-50 split and they get all those perks. Having said that, they still like to make money on an annual basis and they're going to take a loss regardless.
Off topic.
Unless they're losing money, which is an issue.
Off topic, and you're going to hear about this, so we might as well bring it to you first. Sure. There's a story in the Journal de Montreal today showing the new home that Mario Lemieux has purchased and completed building in the Laurentians, in the Laurentian Mountains north of Montreal. It's only $20 million mansion. And I don't begrudge Mario of this by any stretch of the imagination. It's his money. He can spend it however he deems fit. But, you know, just so you, $20 million home, 15,000 square feet.
Is he living back in Montreal?
This is going to be his second home, apparently. Hmm. You know, I guess his summer home or winter home. I mean, I really don't know. What do you do with a 15,000 square foot house? 23 rooms and 10 bathrooms. Hmm. So, nice. you know, Mario, we're just throwing this out there. We're willing to do our show live on location from there.
Yeah, that's
you know,
true.
Just, you know, if you need us to come down there, it'd be a nice little place to
I always find
hang
it
our shingle for a while. You won't even notice that we're there.
I always find it odd when people have houses that have more bathrooms than people in them.
It's always, that's an interesting point. You know,
weird?
Who's filling those bathrooms at that
who's
point?
Who's using those bathrooms?
There's probably bathrooms in that house that will never be used.
It's true.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we have some NHL news and notes to get to. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Shortly past 2:30 in the afternoon, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in the studio by Richard Pollock. Ezra Ginsberg, Michael Remus is behind the producers.
Remember the song?
I guess he's in the producers.
Do you remember the song? At this
point.
I do.
How Bizarre?
How Bizarre?
I do.
Who sang the song?
Remus?
OMC,
yeah. Hmm. Drew kind of looks like the lead singer of OMC. That mustache.
I also don't know what the lead singer of OMC looks like.
I'm watching the video right now, and I can tell you that he definitely does not.
I
don't even remember what he looked like.
Anyways, you can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with all your latest NHL Winnipeg Jets news is www.IllegalCurve.com.
NHL news and notes.
Positive news is few and far between, so we apparently have something that the NHL and the NHLPA have agreed upon, a number of issues. It's going to Kevin McGran of the Toronto Star. First of all, let's go through them in order. We'll get to as many of them that are really as relevant. Start of free agency has been moved to June 15th, or 48 hours after the Stanley Cup has been awarded, taking it away from the Canada Day, the July 1st start. Your thoughts on that move of the start of NHL free agency?
I like that move because, first off, it takes away from your Canada Day celebrations. No, just kidding. But I never really understood why there was such a long pause, maybe, you know, to compensate for what else was going on, you know, with the Stanley Cup. But why not, you know, start it off early? And, you know, it's good that they agreed to that.
I don't like it. I actually like the July 1st. Like, give it a little bit of a, you know, if you're Dean Lombardi this year, sure, during the playoffs, you don't have much to do. You know, you're preparing for the draft and you can prepare for free agency, but I don't mind a little buffer of a 2-3 week period there before you go into July 1st. I don't mind that. I mean, as this drew more so, and the details weren't necessarily in that article, but just more so to kind of open up negotiations like the NBA, and then you can actually sign the contracts on July 1, which is basically the same thing, but.
Oh, that's a good point.
I actually prefer the July 1 opening of free agency, and I like it, the national holiday. It's kind of a cool thing.
As far as I can tell, it doesn't specify that. It just says that it's sort of opening. Yeah. I think it's taking a page out of Major League Baseball, which really does start free agency about 48 hours after the end of the World Series. So
that does hurt you in one way, and if you think about it this way, remember, you know, certain players in the past, Philly's been involved in this, Nashville, have been traded free agency.
Mm-hmm.
For some form of compensation at the draft or right before the draft, that basically won't be the case anymore.
Well, it still could happen.
Sure, but it's... Well, no, because the rights will be up June 15th, so it wouldn't, because it would be before the draft. Right?
Right, that's true. Yeah. I mean,
I don't like it. I'd leave it July 1.
I think this takes the frenzy out of it a little bit.
Well, I think if we proved anything, being on air on July 1st, it's not much of a frenzy.
It's not much.
I mean, when we were frenzying over what, Al Montoya? And not, it wasn't even Al Montoya.
It was a frenzy over the omelets.
Jonas Gustafsson?
Well, when they signed Ponikarovsky and then Ezzy's dad had the best line. Order the rings.
Lord of the Rings?
Order the rings.
Order the rings.
Order the Stanley Cup rings.
Right. I mean, it hasn't been much of a frenzy, but in the grand scheme of things, does this really make that big of a difference? It's an extra couple weeks, right?
Yeah.
Was that Remus?
Look, you're still going to have the frenzy. It just won't be July 1. Who cares? Yeah, enjoy your Canada Day.
Okay.
Well, Rima,
thanks,
Rima.
Yeah, appreciate that insight there, Rima. Appreciate it.
Great insight.
Yeah. Claude Giroux is leaving his team in Germany after suffering a neck injury. First, they were really playing it down, but then throughout the course of the week, it seemed like it was getting a little bit more concerning to the Flyers brass. You know... How concerned?
Well, it's a neck injury. I mean, I don't know enough details about it, but it's a neck injury. Is there ever a slight neck injury? Especially the guy with concussion issues?
Yeah.
Not in my books.
You want him back immediately.
Yeah, I think it was Wayne Simmonds last year that injured Giroux and he had the concussion. Then he came back. I think he's seen the same specialist as Sidney Crosby, right?
He's going to Atlanta to see...
Oh, you mean it's not good because that might mean...
Surprised Crosby would allow his doctor to see Giroux based on their dislike for each other.
I'm surprised that Crosby wasn't the one who caused the neck injury to Giroux. We know he broke his wrists.
Right.
Yeah, and which I still appreciate Sidney Crosby not apologizing for that. Yeah. There you go. If you need an example, NHLers, for a guy not apologizing for something that they admittedly did, there you go. Sidney Crosby breaking Claude Giroux's wrists in the playoffs. You know, he's going to see Ted Carrick in Atlanta. That's the guy that Crosby went to.
Right.
You know.
I think Jonathan Taves saw that guy, too.
Yes, that's what Jonathan Taves said last week on the show.
Right. I listen. You don't listen.
No.
Maybe you did listen.
I did listen. I remembered. I mean, I remember it now that you brought it up, but I didn't remember it before you did.
And I can't believe I remembered that based on the amount of T3s I've done. So.
Yes. In fact, that's true. You're on your way to Atlanta soon enough to see him as well for your back.
I'm just expecting I'm going to fall asleep any minute. So,
well, we can only hope.
That's your regular show, though, Ezzy.
Yeah, just an hour of me sleeping. Nobody would listen.
Remus, you got that audio for snoring?
1 second.
We'll move on to Ryan Murray in the interim.
I think, Drew, before you keep going, I think people don't realize when we talk about Ezzy snoring based on, you know, the road trip we just took 2 weeks ago, you know, you can't sleep in the same room as this guy. He's like a third engine on a train, on a plane. And you can't, it's unbelievable. So, I mean, with your back.
Yeah, this isn't actually dubbed or altered in any such way. This is legitimate.
That's Remus taping him when they were at the draft, right, Remus?
Yeah.
It's impossible to sleep.
Remus, I bet you didn't know that you taping that was just going to... It was going to be like the gift that never stops giving.
It was way worse when we went to Fargo last year.
Oh, it's gotten worse over the... Yeah, it's gotten
worse. Has it got worse?
Yeah, we hacked you in the closet on the way down to Drew's wedding.
I've lost quite a few friends over this.
Well, I'm not even touching it. Let's go on to Ryan Murray. He tore his labrum in his shoulder. He's, you know, the Blue Jackets obviously drafted him second overall. He's going to be the anchor on the Blue Jackets defense.
Yeah.
Can you turn off the snoring at this point?
Snoring rants.
Yeah. You know, at this point, you know, with him out now, I mean, should the Blue Jackets almost hope that the, you know, that the season doesn't come around?
Well, it's funny. He was playing for the Everett Silver Tips, and he was actually having a good season in the WHL, and he was obviously penciled in to be Canada's number one defenseman. Richie's losing it a little bit here. He was penciled in to be Canada's number one defenseman at the World Junior Hockey Championships, but this is a little bit concerning for the Blue Jackets with this injury, the shoulder. And you know, Scott Housen, I don't think he was saying that they're not sure how severe the injury is.
It's a torn labrum. I mean,
but yeah, exactly, a torn labrum in your shoulder. That's not good. So you just hope that, you know, he gets healthy as soon as possible. Right? There's not much more else you can say because he probably would have made the NHL this year. They were saying that he was NHL ready to play for Columbus.
Brought him up, yeah.
And it's unfortunate, but.
Last news and note, Kraft annually does their Hockeyville promotion where, yes, you know, you see two NHL teams play an exhibition game in sort of a smaller town somewhere in Canada that typically wouldn't get an NHL exhibition game.
True.
It's a casualty of the lockout. It's been wiped from the schedule. There's not going to be another Kraft Hockeyville. Instead, Kraft is going to donate $1 million to Hockey Canada to help with minor hockey associations.
They donate some Kraft dinner to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, too.
You know... The Kraft is saying, NHL, you know, it's enough already. They're giving it back to amateur hockey.
This is that's right. This is money that the NHL used to get that they no longer get. And, you know, credit to Kraft for moving it from, you know, one column to another column and, you know, helping the minor hockey world. But, you know, the NHL needs...
If more sponsors acted this way, maybe get a deal done.
Well, and that's what I'm going to say. This is just the tip of the iceberg.
I think so.
Further sponsors will jump off. You know, they want to spend their money and they want to spend it somewhere, but if the NHL refuses to accept it by continuing to have lockouts and not getting anything done, they're not going to hold their money and pool it and give it back all at the same time.
I think this could have a bit of a domino effect. You think Bridgestone is happy that the NHL canceled the Winter Classic? They were a title sponsor,
sure,
of the Winter Classic. I don't think that they're happy. You know, these are the things that I'm sure that the NHL and the NHLPA are aware of, but I don't know if it's really putting enough pressure on them, because these sponsors don't have to stay with them. And, you know, obviously most of the sponsors will have long relationships with the NHL and they make a lot of money by having those relationships. But a lockout, it just isn't good from a business perspective. You know, from the league perspective, they obviously want to make more money for themselves. It's all about profits, but... but, you know, as far as Kraft goes, good for them, because they've donated a lot of money to amateur hockey, so their amateur hockey is going to benefit.
Yeah. Okay, we're in agreement on that one. Yeah. Yeah. Anything you want to add there, Richie?
I want some more snoring.
You want? Well, let's go to break. Nobody wants more snoring. When we come back, we're going to do rapid fire, and we'll do cheers and jeers. My God, Ezzy, you need to get that fixed. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. One final segment on this Saturday afternoon.
Rapid Fire.
Anaheim Ducks forward Bobby Ryan gets it started on Rapid Fire. He has decided to go play overseas, signing with Mora IK of Sweden's second-tier pro league. This decision comes after Bobby Ryan said the following in September and October. I quote, I know you will lose guys right away. That being said, I'm an NHL player. I'm not going to take somebody else's job overseas. I'm going to handle things the way I think things should be handled. I think it's important to stay here in the United States and be part of the solution and not just run from it. Close quote.
And then he ran from it.
In order to make room for Bobby Ryan, the team will have to cut one of the two North Americans already signed to the club, Tyler Gatto or Preston Ryan. As far as I know, no relation. Bobby Ryan, is he within his rights or is he a hypocrite?
He's a huge hypocrite. That's a joke. I mean, come on, you can't come out and say that and come right back and just completely go against what you said. I mean, that's, come on, Bobby Ryan. I mean, that's a joke there. Don't come out, call everybody out, and then go and break the rule that you did, break the quote-unquote unspoken rule that you just spoke about.
Would you go as far and say, it's absurd?
It's absurd.
It's absurd!
It is. It actually is. You know what? Like, Bobby Ryan, get out of here with that stuff. Come on. I mean, you know, stand by your comment, or don't make a comment like that at all and just go over there and take a job. That's fine. It's within your right. But don't come up with the big comments. And, God, you know.
How so much can change in a two-month time span. He was one of the only guys that was saying that other players shouldn't be going to Europe and taking other people's jobs. And then when it looks like there's an increased chance that there might not be a season this year, he goes over to play with Andrzej Kopitar in Sweden. So it's highly hypocritical.
My question is, you see all these players signing in like the second tier divisions, and Tobias Enström has just signed in the second tier in Sweden.
He was already over, supposed
to be in Modo.
Yeah,
I don't think he ever played for Modo.
No, but he's now. I can find
him. Alex Steen is playing for Modo too.
Okay, let me just see. Hang on, I got Enström's right here. I think it was just made official.
Division two. Legal Curve. Dave linked it this morning.
Yeah, he was playing in Austria, and now he's going to play in the Swedish second division. What's the talent level in the Swedish second division?
I don't know. I mean, it's probably still okay, but I don't know. That's a weird switch.
It's obviously a lot better with Andrzej Kopitar and Bobby Ryan there, but I mean, it's not. I mean, if you want a comparable, it's below the AHL for sure.
He's going to be playing with the Örebro Vipers. His brother also plays on that team, as well as Maple Leafs defenseman Carl Gunnarsson.
There you go.
So there you go. That could explain why he's playing with that team.
And there are rules, Drew, just quickly. I mean, we've talked about this before on the show, but there are rules. They can only have a certain amount of North American players, so there might just be a shortage of jobs.
Right. Next question in rapid fire. Congratulations are in order, as you'll want to give congratulations. He's your boy. They're in order to Mark Recchi and Lou Lamoriello. Both men have been inducted into the National Italian American Sports Hall of Fame.
I read this. I'm glad. I read that for the listeners out there who don't know, Drew typically gives us a show plan the day before the show, and I read this and I really like the question, so continue.
I'm more surprised that you guys read the show plan, because typically neither of you do that, so.
And I don't know how to read.
I read it today.
Oh, there you go.
I don't know how to read, right?
I couldn't sleep all night, so I was right. Yeah.
So, and
it was, let me tell you, it was a mediocre show plan.
Put me right to sleep.
Anyways, both Mark Recchi and Lou Lamoriello have been inducted into the National Italian American Sports Hall of Fame. These men join Tom Barrasso, Dino Ciccarelli, Alex Del Vecchio, Phil Esposito, Tony Esposito, and John Mariucci as hockey players who have been enshrined into this Hall of Fame. Of this group of players, who is your favorite Italian American hockey player? And before you ask, Luciano Borsato is from Ontario.
He follows me on Twitter, by the way, and I follow him back.
I'll tell you what, Luciano's a lot more disappointed than you are.
I'm going off the board here. I'm going on none of the names you just mentioned.
Really?
Ally Afraidy.
I don't think he's in the Hall of Fame yet, though.
No, he's not in the Hall of Fame, but he's Italian.
Is he American?
Yeah, he's American.
Okay.
Yeah. He had the mullet, he had the hard shot.
Yeah, not only did he have the mullet, but he had the bald mullet.
Yeah, of course.
For the record, Mark Recchi's actually from BC.
Oh.
He's not American.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
Unless
too,
it's
actually.
Italian North American.
No, it says National Italian American Sports Hall of Fame. So
yeah, Mark
Recchi
is Canadian.
He's Canadian though.
Maybe he's got some American. Maybe he became an American citizen in the course of his career or something.
Anyways,
Drew, what are you, the American embassy?
One of my favorite hockey players, period, of all time. I was going to pick Brian Gionta. He's Italian.
Yeah, that's good.
And he's one of my favorites of all time. But I'm going to go off the board, and I actually don't know for a fact. You're going to love this. Richie's going to love this name drop. I don't know if he's American. Peter Taglianetti.
Good. I like it.
I just don't know if he's American. But, and this is why I'm really excited to bring this up. And Remus is going to absolutely lose his mind when I bring this up.
Is that a guarantee?
About 15 years ago.
Oh, boy.
They had a competition to see if,
here we go,
if athletes could body slam Yokozuna on a naval ship. And I know you're losing your mind. Peter Taglianetti. And you can look this up on the internet. Tried to body slam Yokozuna successfully.
Did he pull out his back like you?
I think he might have pulled out his back.
Actually, Ezzy's now acting as Yokozuna is how it works.
If you look it up, Peter Taglianetti, Italian-American, I believe. Is he American, first of all?
Doesn't matter, really.
But he's Italian.
Okay.
Tried to body slam Yokozuna. And I just find that amazing. So I'll go with Peter Taglianetti.
Okay.
Just confirm that was true.
That is true?
You. Yeah.
Okay. Credit goes out to the Buffalo Sabres, who announced early on in the lockout that they will not be laying off any of their staff nor requiring any staff to take a pay cut. What to do then with a workforce full of people with very little to do? The solution for the Sabres was the creation of something called Sabres University, a program for Sabres staff to learn about the organization and other areas of the organization that they may typically not have that much experience in or knowledge about.
Great idea.
Yeah.
A class on Sabres history was mandatory for all employees, but the employees could take electives in classes on 30 or so areas of the team operation, including ice making, public speaking, coaching strategy, scouting, marketing, and fitness and diet. If you could take a class on one segment of an NHL franchise operation, what area would you focus on?
That's a good question. I've always wanted to ride the Zamboni, so maybe how to be an ice maker. You know, being someone who's coached a little bit of hockey, I'd probably like to be more involved with, you know, hockey and strategy and something like that. But, you know, this is a great idea, and it empowers the employees, and it makes them, you know, increases their morale. And to be honest with you, this could help some people that maybe don't have the business connections to maybe one day get into a management role just by having that exposure. So
I want to learn about the pre- and post-game radio host Rick Ralph. That's what I want to know. Rick would be an interesting lesson. I love, because he's got that great sense of humor. Remus, your thoughts? It's your boy. That's your show.
He has a few zingers every day that really get you.
That'd be good. That'd be interesting.
Before we get on to the last question, the rapid fire, you got to love our Twitter followers and our listeners. Two people have tweeted us, at King Woodballs and at Hebert14. Both of them have tweeted at us to say that Peter Taglianetti is American.
He
was born in Framingham, Massachusetts.
Awesome.
August 15th, 1963.
And he tried to body slam Yokozuna. Yes.
He tried to lift the 568-pound Yokozuna. So this is from Wikipedia. He could not get the wrestler to leave his feet.
Well, there you go.
Story like that, it's got to be true.
People forget. I mean, Taglianetti was a scrapper. He used to fight. He was a good defenseman. I think he won a cup with Pittsburgh, actually. Maybe. He played for Pittsburgh, too.
Rick just tweeted, "Stop talking about me."
Wouldn't Rick be interesting to, like, to, you know, give you his pre- and post-game routine?
Last question in rapid fire. The Nashville Predators...
I think we should only talk about Rick for the rest of the show.
Yeah, we should have a full show, just Rick.
Yeah, just Rick.
The Nashville Predators... If this lockout goes much longer, we will have a show,
Rick
just
Ralph,
Rick.
3-hour Rick Ralph show.
The Nashville Predators smash-mobbed a local youth hockey game earlier this week.
This was great. I watched that.
Bringing to the arena head coach Barry Trotz, the team public address announcer Paul McCann, their radio team of Tom Callahan and Stu Gribson, the Predators Ice Girls, and their mascot Nash. As you would expect, the reactions from the players are priceless, and the video compiled by the Predators is available via our Twitter feed at Illegal Curve. If you were one of those kids playing in the game that was quote-unquote smash-mobbed, what aspect of the mob would leave you the most excited?
Why isn't their mascot Kevin Nash?
Well, Kevin Nash is a human. Nash is spelt, in this case, G-N-A-S-H, gnashing of your teeth.
Kevin Nash is Diesel, right?
Yes.
It's a good connection with Yoko.
He was here on H&L a few weeks ago.
Was he?
Yeah.
In studio.
Yeah.
So was he the Big Show? That's a different person.
Yeah, different guy.
The Hitman. Kevin Nash was
who's the Big Show?
The Wolfpack.
Paul White.
Yeah. Paul White.
He's also the Giant. He was the Giant.
Yeah. The Giant, yeah, okay. Yeah. A Razor Remote.
Can you guys answer the question?
Legal Curve Wrestling Show will be airing.
Yeah. What the question? What was the question again?
The question was which of the, you know, what would leave you most excited if you were smash mobbed as a youth hockey player? The PA announcer, the head coach, the mascot, the ice girls, you know.
Well, as you say the ice girls, I would say Barry Trotz.
Yeah. I was gonna say the ice girls, no.
Or Barry Trotz dressed up as the ice girls.
You have to watch this video though on our tweet it. Yeah. It was on the Predators website, but because it's basically a bunch of 10-year-old kids, I believe they were 10 or young kids playing hockey, and then all of a sudden they bring in a marching band and all these fans.
It's like that commercial, right?
Yeah, it was super cool. And after they, you know, in this video they'll show you that they interview these kids and they just say this was like a highlight of their hockey careers, getting to meet Barry Trotz and all of the people associated with the team. But
you think Trotz taught him the trap?
You can hear some of the advice he gives. He's like, you got to take quicker shifts there, kids.
Yeah, it was great.
It's a nice thing to do, you know. It's
giving back, yeah.
Stories like that make the lockout that much
especially in a market like Nashville, which is probably one of the markets that's hurt the most by this lockout.
For sure.
In terms of, you know, PR and everything else.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
and jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Let's do this.
Richie.
I'm jeering any more Justin Schultz profiles. Like, it's enough already. First of all, I just want to say one thing about that, because every network's doing them. It's enough. I've seen him 100 times. Okay, he's good. This is the one thing I'm frustrated about. If he did to Edmonton what he did to Anaheim, they'd be vilifying him forever. But because on this case, in this occasion, the guy goes to Canada, bails on the team and goes to Canada, as opposed to the States, he's back, he's our hometown boy, he's coming again. You know what? It's enough. It's enough. If you're going to do it both ways then. You know, the picking and choosing. I don't like that.
Is he? I'm cheering Teppo Numminen. He was inducted into the IIHF Hall of Fame, along with others. Gord Miller of TSN was on there. Teppo Numminen.
Danielle Goyette was also on there.
Yeah, one of the greatest Jets of all time, Teppo Numminen. So, got to give him my cheer.
There you go. That's good. I'll wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to jeer Ian White, Christopher Stieg, Jeff O'Neill, Dave Boland. Any of those players that were wearing the Puck Gary hats.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
was Bowen wearing that hat too?
I don't know. I don't want to say. I don't know which players were wearing that hat. Yeah. But, you know, keep it above board. First of all, cancer is no laughing matter. Yeah. Never should be joked about. Sure. Keep it above board and get the deal done without resorting to the name calling. All you're doing is making yourself look foolish beyond words. That's it for this Saturday on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our guests, Paul Kelly and Michael McCann. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. It will also be available on tsn1290.ca. A big thank you to our sponsors, Carbone Coal Fired Pizza, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, David Carr of Monopoly Realty, and the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. For Michael Remus, for producer Tim, for Richard Pollock, and for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290, your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.